Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. While Republicans and Democrats slug it out on the presidential campaign trail, a second chorus of calls for change has opened up in this election year, saying we don't have time for traditional politics anymore, that America faces dangerous crises on many fronts and needs a whole new way. Former Speaker of the House, Republican Newt Gingrich, says so. So does former Democratic Senator Gary Hart and the bipartisan group he met with in Oklahoma last week. This hour, On Point, we'll hear from Newt Gingrich and Gary Hart on their big ideas and new ways in what they each call a time of crisis. We're dividing this hour up between these two political players. We'll be speaking with Gary Hart in the second half of the show. But first today, we are joined from New York by former Republican Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. He's out with a new book called Real Change, From the World That Fails to the World That Works. Newt Gingrich, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Tom, it's good to be with you.
So here we are. It's a big day for Republicans. Michigan voting today. Romney and McCain and the rest blasting, battling it out there. Do you see yet on the campaign trail, Newt Gingrich, what you think this country needs to see? Let's just start from the Republicans.
No, I think we still have a lack of depth of the scale of change it's going to take, whether you're trying to solve the energy problem, the environmental problems, the education challenges, the health system, defeat the irreconcilable wing of Islam. I mean, there are a range of challenges which I think is going to require a much deeper and a much more profound commitment to fundamental change. And I don't think in either party you've had that. You've had the slogans, you've had the handheld signs. But when you get down, you start saying, well, tell me about the scale of change you're describing. Most of it's still pretty puny.
We're going to talk with Gary Hart about the Democrats and a national unity government idea that the group he was meeting with is talking about. You know the Republicans very well. You've got plenty of criticism in this book for Democrats, plenty. But let us understand your analysis of what has happened with the Republican Party in the last 10, 15 years. Newt Gingrich, you talk about devastation to your party, about its failures to govern as you hoped. What happened? What went wrong?
Well, I think President Reagan, who had been an FDR Democrat and who understood how to think like a majority, tried to teach Republicans that there were ways you could respond to the American people that would lead them to give you the ability to govern for a long time. We stood on his shoulders in 1994 with the contract with America, and we carried issues like balancing the federal budget, cutting taxes, reforming welfare, all things that Reagan had talked about during his long career. And yet, after I left Congress, the Republicans seemed to revert to being a minority party mentality, even when they were in the majority, building bridges to nowhere, which made no sense at all, spending $250 million for a village that I think had 60 people living in it. The average American looked at that and said, you know, this isn't conservative government. This isn't protecting the taxpayer. This isn't reforming Washington. This is just politics as usual. And I think Republicans have to always remember when they're elected that they represent the taxpayers of America who pay for the pork, not the people who are grateful for the pork.
Give us your analysis of why, Newt. You know this party so well. You've got a kind of critique that goes to the failures of governance, another one that sort of wraps it into a style of campaigning, both of which you say failed in this recent chapter.
Well, I think there were three big things going on. The first was that this was a party which, in the House at least, had been in the minority for 60 out of 64 years, from 1930 to 1994. And the natural culture of the party was a minority mindset that wasn't prepared to govern. The second is that the Republicans had gotten into a habit, still are in a habit, of leaning far too heavily on their consultants to define campaigns and to develop issues. And what you need is leaders. You need people who understand what they believe, who have thought about it long enough to have a real formula and a real program, and who are prepared to stake everything on telling their version of the truth to the American people, even if it doesn't resonate in a focus group or a poll. And then the third thing, I think, is that the Republicans had drifted into an anti-government attitude rather than an effective government attitude. You know, people, I tell conservatives who tell me they want to control the border, that's an effective government. I tell conservatives who want to defeat al-Qaeda, that is an effective government. I tell conservatives who want to make sure we can compete with China and India in science and technology, that's going to require effective government. Doesn't mean you don't have to have an enormously strong private sector. Doesn't mean you don't want to rely heavily on entrepreneurs. But you want government rules, government tax policy, government procurement systems that encourage entrepreneurial behavior. And that requires an attitude towards reshaping government, not just opposing it.
I want to look at campaign styles, which you say feed into these difficulties. But just on the face of it, after the difficulties in governance, I mean, Katrina's the big example everybody throws up, but right across the board during the Bush administration, do you really believe in your bones, Newt Gingrich, that Republicans, after all those years in the minority wilderness, after all the anti-government rhetoric, do they have it in their DNA to be effective governors?
Well, I think that unless they acquire it in their DNA, they're not going to survive as a governing party. And that's part of why I wrote Real Change. Mm-hmm. Real Change basically challenges both parties. It says to the Democrats, you have to be prepared to give up some of your strongest allies, trial lawyers, public employee unions, bureaucrats, tenured faculty, the Hollywood left. It says to Republicans, you have to be prepared to change fundamentally how you think about and work with government and how you think about and work in politics. So in both parties, I think there are enormous challenges. And that's why, you know, Real Change, I think, is a party addressed to Americans. It's not a party. Mm-hmm. It's not a book addressed to conservatives or a book addressed only to Republicans. But it's a book that was written for every American to look at and decide, do you want the kind of future that requires real change, or in order to avoid real change, are you prepared to accept decay, lower incomes, a weaker economy, less effective education, and a country that is in greater danger?
Real campaigning and voting going on today in Michigan. There's an important argument you make in here about the Republican style of campaigning. And you say that base mobilization with a scorched earth negativity gradually turns people off. It simply exhausts them. What happened there in your view, Newt Gingrich?
Well, I think that the concept of the red versus blue polarization, base mobilization model, you know, makes some limited sense for one campaign. But it can't be a governing strategy because over time, in order to get your base mobilized, you have to be so intense and so hostile that you drive away independents and you drive away moderate members of the other party. And then after a while, you begin to drive away your own moderate members and you shrink until you're less than a majority. That's why last year, in every single close Senate race, the incumbent Republican lost. They were 0-6 among close incumbents. And I think that should be for Republicans a very sobering warning that unless they're prepared to have real change and unless they're prepared to take this book seriously, they should expect to have a potentially long period in the minority because the country's not going to rehire people who aren't prepared to govern for the whole country.
The title of your book is Real Change: From the World That Fails to the World That Works. Now, the world that works that you point to is the market-driven world. But what about on that front? I mean, the whole country is staring right now at the subprime mess. We saw, you know, yet another bank selling a huge chunk of itself abroad, yesterday. Does the subprime mess tell us something about the limitations of the market when it comes to driving national policy and national efficiency?
Absolutely. Look, I am not for an open-ended faith that markets automatically produce good results. I mean, the fact is, people have had historically a remarkable ability to be stupid and to be self-deceptive, going all the way back to the tulip mania in Holland in the 1600s. And so the subprime mess is just the most recent example, just as the earlier bubble in IT stock was an example, that human beings will on occasion do really dumb things. The power of the market is that it punishes the dumb people and rewards the smart people. And over time, markets tend to have a remarkably powerful effect. But that doesn't mean at any given moment you should say the market tells you exactly what to do. Let me point out that three different examples here. One, the world that works is based on science and technology. It's based on exactly the same patterns that are giving you a cell phone with a camera, that give you an iPod and an iPhone, that give you a BlackBerry and a laptop computer. There are enormous potential in science and technology, and to the and virtually no political leader pays attention to the power to create a better future in science and technology. Two, there are government examples that really work. I spend about half a chapter in Real Change describing what Rudy Giuliani did in New York with crime. And the fact is that the computer statistics or CompStat model has made New York the safest large city in the U.S., four times safer than Houston, a 75% reduction in crime. It is one of the great case studies, something which Dennis Smith at New York University has done a great work on.
You're supporting Rudy for president?
No, but I think you have to be very respectful of what a great job he did with innovation in New York City and how serious a leader he is. I'm not supporting anyone for president. I'll support the nominee. But third, there's a video on YouTube called FedEx versus Federal Bureaucracy, where I outline vividly the power of UPS and FedEx, who do use market systems and technology. They can track 23 million packages a day while they're moving and do so efficiently that you're allowed to track it on your own computer. And most people have actually, checked to see where a package is. By contrast, in the world that fails, the federal government can't find somewhere between 10 and 20 million people, even when they're sitting still. That gives you a sense of scale.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with two outspoken political players, Newt Gingrich and Gary Hart, about their quite different calls to move beyond politics at a time of national crisis, as each describes it. Newt Gingrich is with us right now. Gary Hart joins us in a few minutes. Newt Gingrich's new book is Real Change, From the World That Fails to the World That Works. Right now, Mary is on the line. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think it's odd that Republicans are calling for reconciliation and bipartisanship when they don't have the ability to get elected in the majority. And what they put Democrats through for the last 8 years is just unbelievable. And now I'd like to see Democrats be elected in the majority, or if not, still listen to Republicans. But I just object to the way we've been treated under this Bush administration.
Newt Gingrich, Mary kind of says you've got your nerve calling for this kind of approach now after everything she's seen.
Well, I think that you have to go back and look. When I was Speaker, we passed welfare reform with exactly half the House Democrats voting yes. We passed a balanced budget act with a substantial number of Democrats voting yes. I think you can have a dialogue. I have recently worked with Senator John Kerry on having electronic prescribing for medication to save lives and to make the health system more effective and less expensive. I've worked with Senator Clinton and Congressman Patrick Kennedy on issues that were involving electronic health records and health information technology. And I think you can find ways to work together if you think it through and you work at it. As I said earlier, 87% of the American people favor English as the official language of government. That's a majority of Democrats, a majority of Republicans, a majority of independents. Real Change, we have an appendix, which is the platform of the American people. Every single item on that platform has a majority support from Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And my point to her would simply be, wouldn't it be nice if we could actually get the two parties this spring before the election to actually work together to pass some things that overwhelmingly the American people agree on?
Get practical with us about how you see this vision unfolding, Newt, if it could. I mean, You make the argument essentially that America is at its heart sort of a conservative centrist country. You call the Democrats a kind of 15% outlier. What do you want the Democrats to do? Just kind of pack it up and go home? And what about Republicans? I mean, how would this work functionally? Is this just the old bipartisanship please call?
No, look, first of all, when you look at the data, A majority of Democrats agree, for example, and English is official language of government, a majority of Democrats agree that we ought to have a tax break for corporations that keep their headquarters in the U.S. A majority of Democrats agree that we ought to strengthen math and science education so we can solve the energy problem better. A majority of Democrats agree that we ought to have prizes for major breakthroughs like a hydrogen car or a car that will go 100 miles to the gallon.
So what do you do with that? Do both sides strike their colors?
Well, I don't think it's a question of striking your color. I think it's a question of something which we've had before in American history, which is reaching out and saying, aren't there some red, white, and blue issues we can agree on that we can actually work on together? And then there are other things we'll disagree on and we can fight over. But I think the idea that it's got to be, you know, either automatic bipartisanship and no disagreement, or you've got to disagree so bitterly you can never find a way to work together. I think both of those are unacceptable futures and futures that aren't likely to produce a very effective country.
Let's go to Sarah in Groton, Massachusetts. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi. I had two quick points. One is that the rhetoric that surrounded the contract with America in the early 90s was a direct precursor, actually caused the kind of divisive politics that you're trying to reverse now, which I think is a good thing. But it did, in fact, surround the contract with America, regardless of what was in it. The other point I'd like to address is your early discussion of market-driven government. And even though the market rewards the smart and punishes the dumb, the government is there to serve everyone. And you have to have a government that looks out for the interests of all of its tax-paying people. And so the market should have a limited but controlled role in the function of the government. And I'd like to know how you can respond to each of those points.
Sarah, thanks very much. Newt, first, your hand in setting the tone of American politics in the last big chapter here. And what about the market limitations?
Well, look, I believe in legitimate and direct partisanship where it's appropriate, but I would also point out that a contract with America, which included welfare reform supported by 92% of the country, a balanced budget supported by 89% of the country, the first tax cuts in 16 years supported by a majority of the American people, those were the contract was actually a unifying document. It wasn't a polarizing document in terms of the average American.
But Sarah says specifically, look at the rhetoric around it, that you sort of lit the fire that led to the scorched earth. What are you saying?
I think that's very hard to sustain. The fact is American politics has always been rough and tumble. Go back and look at the language Democrats used in the 1970s to describe Nixon and then Ford and then Reagan. I mean, there's a long tradition of toughness and partisanship. But I want to talk briefly about her second point where I agree 100%. I am a Theodore Roosevelt Republican. I believe in markets, but I want them to be markets that are policed by the government. I want to make sure that you don't have fraud. But I'll give you an example. I would like the government to make sure that wherever I go in America, I drink clean water. Now, I don't want the government to necessarily try to run a nationwide water department. I don't want the government to decide to define for me and have the government deliver my lunch at McDonald's. But I want to make sure that any restaurant I go into anywhere in America is serving clean water that is drinkable and that is healthy. And that is, and she's exactly right, what you want are markets which direct economic resources within a framework that is policed by and defined by the government.
Hard to argue with clean water. Here's a Newt Gingrich. Everybody can drink. Brian in Columbia, South Carolina. What do you think?
I was just making the point that I was not a Newt Gingrich fan when he was in Congress. I've become a Newt fan since he's left Congress, and I think, and I'd like to hear him comment, that maybe that's because you have to be outside of government in order to make real effective bipartisan change. And I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. Newt, what do you say? We've got you for just a couple more minutes here. What do you say?
Well, I think there's something to that, unfortunately. One of the reasons that I really decided not to run this year was that I didn't know how to make the case for real change as we do in the book and lay out the scale of change we think is necessary and do it inside the tempo and the pattern of presidential campaigns. And I think that there's something to this notion that sometimes you need to get some distance and you need to think about it for a while before you can make the case. And I think that I've been helped by having a number of years since I stepped, you know, I spent 20 years in Congress and 4 years as Speaker, and I've now had an opportunity to spend the last 9 years really thinking about and working on what is the scale of change we need in America to be successful. And I'm not sure I could have done that had I been in public office.
What about the guys and the gal in the arena right now? Hillary Clinton's got a whole bunch of Christmas presents for the country she thinks will make change. She says Barack Obama talks about turning the page, transformational change. John McCain says, I'm the reformer in this crew. What do you say?
Well, I think people should look very carefully at the slogan and then ask what the substance is. I mean, I'm going to use your language. I mean, if anybody in America believes that Senator Clinton can give you a government Christmas presents and you're not going to pay for it, then we've learned nothing out of the last 50 years. In Senator Obama's case, I think he's very attractive and very interesting. But at some point, he's got to define what is the change he's talking about. And Senator McCain is in the same boat. I mean, these are serious people. They're intelligent people. I would hope that over the next few months that we will see much more detail and much more specificity so we can see whether or not they're prepared to have real change or they're only using change as a slogan to try to get elected.
Senator Gary Hart's about to jump into your shoes here. Do you see, I've just got you for a minute, Newt Gingrich, do you see a Republican Party moving away from the scorched earth negativity, your phrase that you criticized in recent years? Does it have the stuff to move off that?
I don't know, in all honesty. I hope it does. That's certainly what I'm actively advocating across the country. That's why I founded American Solutions as a movement to try to get us to be positive and to focus on solutions. Let me also say, you're about to hear from somebody who was the co-chair of the Hart-Rudman Commission, which is probably the most important look at national security in the last since 1947. And I think Gary can look back. I helped create that, and he can look back with great pride on how accurate and how insightful that report turned out to be.
Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich joining us there from New York. His new book is Real Change, From the World That Fails to the World That Works. Newt Gingrich, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let's turn right now to Denver, Colorado, and former Senator Gary Hart. He was senator from Colorado from 1975 to 87, twice ran for president in 1984 and 88. He was a member of the bipartisan panel that met earlier this month, just last week, I think, at the University of Oklahoma, looking for ways to move past bitter partisanship in Washington, even talking about forming a national unity government. Senator Gary Hart, thanks very much for being with us.
Great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
A national unity government sounds like something out of, I don't know, a European capital. What are you all proposing there in Oklahoma?
Well, with all due respect, I think the press got it wrong from the beginning. There were reports that Mayor Bloomberg convened the meeting, not true. Reports that this was an effort to draft a start a third party, not true. To draft an independent candidacy, not true. So what we were trying to do, if you look at the makeup of the group, half Republican, half Democratic, was urge both parties and their nominees, whomever is elected, to get beyond partisanship and begin to put the national interest first. And I think to a large degree, that's what Speaker Gingrich was talking about a minute ago.
So you had former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn, Senator David Borne of Oklahoma, former, and a lot of others. Bill Brock was there, Bill Cohen, Jack Danforth, Bob Graham. You were there, Gary Hart, right on down. Christy Todd Whitman, Republicans and Democrats. And what exactly were you proposing? How concrete was this?
We were calling on the candidates to say what they would do to get over the partisan divide. And what made this group unique, I think, was that we had all previously had experience at working together, not abandoning our principles, but finding ways to do what was in the best interest of the country. So in a way, even though there were a lot of gray hair there, and in some cases not much hair, it represented probably 300 or 400 person years of experience in governing. Most of that finding ways to reach consensus in the national interest, and that's all we weren't saying we're going to form a government of national unity. We were calling on the candidates to say what they would do, how they would go about bringing the country back together in very specific ways. Just to make a point that you were discussing with Speaker Gingrich. In the first weeks of the new George W. Bush administration in 01, after finishing our national security recommendations and report, I made direct offers to the new Vice President Dick Cheney, whom I had known, to the new Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, whom I had somewhat known, and to National Security Advisor Condi Rice, whom I had known very well, and she had supported me as a presidential candidate, that I would be available to help in any way I could in the new administration, and essentially naively thinking that's the kind of government we were going to have because George Bush had campaigned on that platform.
Yep.
I never heard another word, and it has been the most partisan administration in 50 or 100 years.
So at this point, the group in Norman, Oklahoma is urging candidates to describe how they would establish a government of national unity, reading from your statement here, how they would go beyond tokenism to appoint a truly bipartisan cabinet. Has anybody bitten on this? You've endorsed Senator Barack Obama. Has anyone stood up and said, can you even imagine it? I will appoint a cabinet that's, I don't know, half Republicans and half Democrats.
Not to my knowledge, but on the other hand, everything comes through the media filter, so someone could have said it and I didn't hear it, but I don't think so. I don't. We didn't have any numerical goals, and I myself in our deliberations raised the issue, what if a Democratic president selected one or two or three moderate Republicans in senior positions and hardline neoconservative Republicans said, no, 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 those aren't real Republicans? It's a real problem.
But can you picture it happening? Urgency
John
that you
Kennedy,
had?
Mm-hmm. John Kennedy did it. John Kennedy had a Republican Secretary of Defense, Republican Secretary of the Treasury. Many of his senior advisors and diplomats had been active in Republican administrations. That's the kind of government we need.
Gary Hart, a lot of people want to speak with you. Let me begin to turn to them from Manchester, I guess Vermont here. Tom is calling. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much for taking the call. I'm an independent voter. I always have been, and actually, for the record, I actually never voted for President Clinton, but I wanted to make a comment regarding Newt Gingrich because I used to support a lot of where he comes from, and I just think he's full of crap because he's just when it comes down to it, he gets super partisan, and he's just a neocon masquerading as an intelligent speak person. I like what Gary Hart's saying because I think we do need to bring people together, and that's what excites me about Obama, is that he seems authentic, he seems open for opportunity, and when you look back actually on Clinton, even though there were a lot of things I didn't like about him, he actually did reach across party lines and did have, like Senator Cohen from Maine on his staff, and you know, we do need that. I am super suspect of Newt Gingrich. If Newt Gingrich were to come out and say that George Bush is the worst president in his lifetime and that he makes Clinton look like Reagan, then I would jump all on board with him in a second and have him drafted for president.
Tom, we've got it. Gary Hart, there's a lot we want to ask you out of that, but just for starters, what do you make? Do you see Newt Gingrich's line as an extended hand across the divide or something else?
Well, I think what's the subtext of what Newt was saying is that he's doing what I've been urging Republicans to do for a number of years, and that is take their party back. I think Newt, when the new Republican Party emerged in the age of Reagan, composed of the religious right, neoconservatives driving foreign policy, and radical libertarians slashing taxes for the wealthy and unbalancing the budget, Newt had to go along with it because that's where his party was. But it has run the Republican Party into the ground. They are in deep trouble, and I think the real issue politically is whether the traditional conservatives and traditional Republicans can take their party back. It will be a dogfight, and I think it's part of what's going on in the Republican nomination race right now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with a couple of outspoken political players this hour, each saying with different tunes that the big parties have not been cutting it, not addressing America's problems. It's time for change. It's time for something different. We heard earlier in this hour from Newt Gingrich. Right now, from Denver, Colorado, Gary Hart joins us, former Colorado senator and presidential candidate. He was in Oklahoma last week at the University of Oklahoma with a big bipartisan crew of very experienced politicians saying we need something new. We've got to get beyond partisanship here. What do you make of it? Let's go to Sam in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Sam, what do you have to say to Gary Hart?
Hey, well, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And I think the conversation about unity really scares me. I think change comes out of, not unity, but out of difference. That's what makes change. That's a difference of ideas. And I'm afraid that a unity is just a move to the center where you don't have a free exchange of different ideas. We have serious, serious problems in this country, you know, of a government that's totally overrun by corporate control. We've been on that. We're the only power left that's on a steady war economy. I mean, we haven't changed that. Europe is way ahead of us on that score. And to say nothing of global warming, these are drastic problems that require drastic changes. And I think what you need is a huge difference of opinion. I'm much more interested in candidates like Kucinich and people in the Republican Party that are all the way on the other side. They're the ones who are talking about real change. Clinton and Obama, there's no difference. That's why they're not interesting to me. They're not provoking the American people to think outside the box, and that's where we need to be.
Sam, we've got it. Gary Hart, Sam says, come on, forget this make nice stuff. Change means rolling up your sleeves and fighting for it.
Yeah, none of us are in the Oklahoma group, which, by the way, is a very informal group. There's
yes.
no permanence to it. Are talking about least common denominator. What brought us together was the seriousness of the nation's challenges, huge debts and borrowing from the Chinese, involvement in two wars which have ground us to a halt. I wouldn't disagree about the wartime economy at all. Tax cuts for the rich, climate change, and globalization and all the rest of it, stuff that people like me have been talking about for 25 or 30 years. But I think it is naive, with all due respect, to think Dennis Kucinich or Ron Paul are going to bail this country out. It's simply not going to happen. There are serious people who are not partisan in the sense of saying only the Republicans have the truth or only the Democrats have the truth, who are raising serious issues, who are challenging the system. And by the way, when people say, I don't know what the candidates stand for, I have experience at media compression. To think that any of the major candidates can now stand up before a rally of 1,000 or 5,000 people and outline a detailed economic plan, dramatic or otherwise, is just nonsense. It's all sound bites now. And people, we now have websites, which we didn't in my day, unfortunately, when the famous Where's the Beef came along, where people could go and see what...
Lay it all out.
In detail, what I had said. But you cannot do it in campaign rallies right now.
But you're describing something here, serious people who are at some level kind of above politics or at least above hyper-partisanship.
You could be called statesmen.
Or graybeards. Do you really think they're enough on the same beam that they can sit down at the same table and sort through the issues that Sam's talking about here? You know, isn't there a fight to be had about fundamental perspectives on where this country ought to be, where it ought to
Absolutely.
Be going?
Absolutely. And as I say, this isn't least common denominator. What it is an effort across party lines to at least have agreement on what the problems are and come up with solutions to them. I think those solutions have to be very dramatic.
Newt Gingrich says the Democrats are like a 15% Hollywood flaky crowd.
He's
one of those guys who would fancy himself a serious person to sit down with you.
Yeah, he's just reverting to his old rhetoric. He and others like him are going to have to get beyond that. If they're still appealing to James Dobson and Richard Pearl and people like that and the Kate and people who want to just keep cutting taxes for the rich, they're not going anywhere. I'm talking about serious people.
But Dobson and Pearl and their ilk are very much alive and kicking in this country. Is it serious to think that they can somehow be shunted aside?
That's up to the Republicans to decide. I don't want them in the Democratic Party.
Michael's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Michael. You're on the air with Gary Hart.
Hello, Tom. Senator Hart, I've got a question for you. I'm extremely disappointed in the Democratic Party. You have been talking about serious candidates. You had three very serious candidates, and none of them made it past New Hampshire.
You're talking Biden and who's
Biden,
on your list?
Chris Dodd and Bill Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got somebody claiming to have experience when in fact she doesn't. And the analogy I use is I've taken a couple of graduate classes in genetics. My wife has a PhD in molecular genetics. She's published papers in peer-reviewed journals, has patents. I talk to her almost every night about her work. That doesn't qualify me to be a geneticist. And I am just really, really frustrated, and I don't understand how right now, with the serious problems we face, the party could have these three inexperienced people leading the pack and the serious people not.
Gary Hart, what do you say?
Well, I've been at this for quite a long time. I'm not a career politician, and turned out not to be a very good one at the end of the day. But I've never quite figured out the chemistry of why some candidates make it and some don't. I hate to keep referring to my own experience. In 84, we had six or seven candidates, and I ended up running second in Iowa, upsetting Vice President Mondale in New Hampshire, and then we went all the way to the convention. And I won about 25 or 26 states, and he won 25 or 26 states. And I think it was the only contested nomination in about 50 years, or one of the few anyway. We may have the same thing this year in terms of Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, but why Senator Biden and Senator Dodd and Governor Richardson didn't do better, you can find 15 different reasons. I can't give you the specific one, but it is the voters who've done this. You can't say, well, it's the party in terms of party people who turn out, but I know from experience in Iowa and New Hampshire, those people take their decisions very seriously. They listen, they go back and forth, and they decide who they think the serious candidates ought to be or are.
Your group in Oklahoma lays out a truly hair-raising list of threats, risks to the country right now that need to be addressed, everything from environmental to spending to health issues and national infrastructure and competition from abroad. I mean, and it puts it in quite a vivid, hair-raising way. Do you see the Democrats still in the race as having the stuff to address that list of crises underfoot?
Well, I'm listening. I made my decision for Senator Obama simply because I don't think he is constrained by old relationships, old deals, old compromises. You could kind of shorthand this by saying it's really an issue of who gets the White House passes, if you want to make it kind of vivid.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
who can rent out the Lincoln bedroom?
Well, I suppose no. Who can come and go?
Yeah.
Who has access to the president and the president's staff?
Mm-hmm.
And I just feared, in the case of Senator Clinton, that it would be a lot of people from the 90s, not all of whom, I mean, many of whom are very nice people, but they're from the 90s. And I would like to try addressing some of these dramatic issues with some new thinking and new people.
What about the argument that Hillary Clinton makes Obama doesn't have enough experience?
Well, I think several callers have addressed that. One rather bitter critic said, if you want to talk about White House experience, that you can include the White House pastry chef. That's too demeaning, I think, to Senator Clinton. But it's experience from the past, and I think the 21st century is dramatically different, even from 15 years ago. And I would like to have some fresh minds and fresh thinking in there, backed up, by the way, by some gray-haired people.
Let's go to Dan in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Dan, you're on the air with Gary Hart.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My concern is the level of polarization that we see based on this primary process. I mean, you look at some of the friends that I'm a young man. I look at some of the friends around me, and I'm concerned, like the Democrats, for instance. I know a lot of people who are socially pretty liberal and are, you know, for instance, in favor of gay marriage and such, but might be against affirmative action. Or you look at a lot of my friends who identify as Republicans who want small government but are very much against, tax breaks for the rich or against, some of the police state sort of the Patriot Act and that sort of thing.
So are you saying if you've got that much polarization within your circle of friends, how can we get bipartisan at the national level? Is that it?
I think it's more, in this age of Web 2.0 and everything's customized, just for me and just for us. Why can't we get a candidate? I look at John McCain breaking with his party on some issues and for some not to some degree Rudy Giuliani breaking with his party as well. I think it's a sign that maybe that the Republican Party is a little bit off kilter, that some of its front running candidates can't even agree with the platforms of the party, and I'd like to see a lot more of that out of the Democrats. I want to see a human being running with differing opinions rather than just an embodiment of the platform principles.
Dan, thanks for your call. Gary Hart, what about that? You're calling on political leaders to hold hands, break bread, break through. But Americans themselves are spread along quite a giant spectrum of views these days. Is there a message here for ordinary citizens as well? Are you saying people are going to have to put their dukes down, surrender their positions a little bit? Is that going to happen?
Absolutely, and that's why I keep using the phrase the national interest. And I blog on the Huffington Post on that, and I get my head taken off by angry people saying, you're not going to be able to get to the national interest until you hang George W. Bush and put all the rest of them in jail. Well, that's a prescription for grinding this country right into the ground. Vengeance is the enemy of progress. If there are a serious number of people out there who say, I'm not going to participate in any party or any government until Bush and his colleagues are in jail, we're not going anywhere. So we either move forward or we move backward. I think a candidate, see, a presidential campaign, and most media don't get this, is a two-stage process. Right now, the candidates are running for leader of their party.
Mm-hmm.
And one hopes that the parties, each party says, well, I want a leader of my party that is focused on the national interest, not just what James Dobson wants. Unfortunately, that doesn't always work. The best presidents are those who dominate their party, who take it over, and who say, all right, I have great interest in labor. I have great interest in the rights of these individual groups. But there is something bigger than all of that, and it's called the national interest. And it's bigger than just a composite of all the interest groups that form my party. That's the message people are waiting to hear.
That's what Gary Hart is certainly looking for. Let's go to Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jay, you're on the air.
Thank you. My comment is this. I have to admit, I listen to Rush Limbaugh 1 hour a day just to keep my ears on the enemy.
Okay.
And I have to say that with him and the people that listen to him and call in on his show, it's not so much that you're a Republican or a Democrat. You must be a conservative first. So my question to Mr. Hart is, Limbaugh's listened to 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. He has a very huge voice, and his issue is conservatism. Doesn't the Republican Party have to come to grips first with its conservatives before they can join the national unity conversation? And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Jay, thanks. Gary Hart, there's kind of a reality check.
Well,
come on.
In most democracies, there is a party. Emerson himself said this, a party of the future and the party of the past. We're always going to have conservatives, but there are different kinds of conservatives. If the Republican, if Mr. Limbaugh is a spokesman for the Republican Party, then we are not going to have national interest or national unity, because he demeans anybody who disagrees with him. He uses demeaning language. He's demonized the word liberal, even though it's a very good word, and there is no compromise. It's his way or the highway. Well, if that represents Republican Party thinking, then to hell with them.
But it sure has represented a lot for quite a while.
Frankly, that's why I went to Oklahoma, because there were Republicans there who don't agree with that, and they must be encouraged to take their party back.
Let's get a call from Kristen in Belmont, Massachusetts. Kristen, you're on with Gary Hart.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to call very quickly and make a comment about, you know, all this talk about change is awesome. I agree with it. I am so ready for a change in this country. However, I look at the elections. You see the same people running, the same types of people running, the same, you know, money backing everybody. It's all the same stuff. So you hear all this talk about change. Excuse me, but I don't really see it actually happening. you know what I'm saying? I don't see any change actually happening. I see it all repeating itself. You know, you still have Democrats against Republicans, against independents, and it's all about what's good for each party. I don't really see anybody looking at what's good for the whole.
Kristen, our time's short. Gary Hart, what about it? Kristen wants the change, but doesn't feel it in her bones. You know, it feels like somehow the same old thing underneath.
Well, I think it's the first time in my lifetime, and a rather long lifetime, we've had a mixed race, a serious candidate for the presidency who is mixed race, who grew up abroad, who is a walking internationalist, and who would lay to rest single-handedly race as a factor in American politics. Now, if that's not a change, I'll eat your hat. And who also talks about moving this country into the 21st century, which is a dramatically different century from the 20th. We cannot go back to the 1990s, even the 1990s. We have to adopt, and if we had some time here, I'd give some pretty specific examples in terms of national security, adopt totally new strategies. I think the best chance of that, Barack Obama, but we'll wait and see.
Gary Hart, what's your level of optimism? All these crisis points laid out here in Oklahoma, it's enough to just scare the willies out of a person. Do you see the kind of national coming together starting to gather here that you say is necessary to get it done, or are we headed over the cliff?
No, we're not over the cliff. This is a strong country. It's still the strongest country in the world in almost every measure. But it doesn't mean we can keep sweeping problems under the rug, because we're facing new problems. We're going to have to pay for Social Security and Medicare, particularly Medicare. We're paying our soldiers in Iraq now with money we're borrowing from the Chinese. Our auto industry is in the toilet. The list goes on. That does not mean we don't have strengths. We do. But we're going to have to adapt to a whole new set of realities, and hopefully we'll do that.
Senator Gary Hart, thanks for joining us.
Great pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.